session number 23818, Reel 11.
Commander Easton, Reel 11. Now, when you got back to England from Auckland, well, from New Zealand, aboard HMS Scarborough, where were you sent then? Where were you based?
Well, after we arrived, I think we had done one or two little port visits, nothing of great importance. The opening of the St. Lawrence Seaway came along, and the Queen's participation therein, and she wanted a ship, of course, Earl Mountbatten was involved, of course. He wanted a ship to a sort of flagship. The squadron in which Scarborough was a member was designated for this purpose. The captain in charge of the squadron, whose name I can't recall, his ship, HMS Torquay, who would normally have done the job, had just entered refit. So Scarborough was just taken from me. Said Captain so-and-so will take command of Scarborough, which, as you can imagine, was not very popular with me. So that was the end of Scarborough, as far as I was concerned.
So you basically just got back with her in 1958.
Yes, brought her back from Auckland, and then was relieved of my command for this bit of stuff. But I was given HMS Grenville, which was one of the converted wartime destroyers. They called them in those days Type 15 frigates. There were lots and lots of them. Grenville was up refitting in Rosyth. So I went up to command there and did the rest of my time as CO of the Grenville.
How did the Grenville compare? I mean, this was an adapted destroyer. How did that compare to an actual purpose-built frigate?
Well, of course, quite good. She'd lost nearly all her destroyer guns, of course, in the conversion. She lacked the sophistication of a purpose-designed ship like the Scarborough, but they did their job all right, because I had a completely new ship's company then as well. All the Scarborough people had gone off with the Scarborough.
Now, where was the Grenville based?
We were based Devonport and Portsmouth. Oh, and yes, we also had some time in Chatham.
Were you part of the home fleet, or?
Yes, we were. Did quite a lot of continental visits. Were involved in the Iceland fishery war.
What do you remember of that?
It was, I believe, the first of the fishery wars.
What happened?
Well, you'll be up where the trawlers were doing their fishing. Trawlers were grouped pretty close together. So, and the Iceland ships were constantly trying to interfere with them to stop them fishing, damage their gear, or just be a plain nuisance. So one was in attendance, doing one's best as the situation developed to exercise force majeure. Never came to any shooting. I think both sides realised the reality of the situation, that if there had to be shooting, there would have been shooting, and people would have got killed. But the Icelanders are being, by nature, very sensible people. It never actually got as far as that. A lot of words. It was a war of words, mainly. If you come any closer, I'll be forced to take action. That kind of thing, you know. And that way, it was a bit of a strain, but as long as the British ships kept fishing, which they did, I think one's job was being done. Icelanders did their best to interrupt it all and make life difficult for all of us.
Anything else about the Granville?
We had to refuel at sea, of course, up there several times. There was a tanker up there, and to do this, and we had to do a session in extremely bad conditions, blowing a howling gale, and those ships at slow speed, they didn't steer well, single rudder. Destroyers weren't made for this kind of thing. We had an interesting side-to-side bump with the tanker. It didn't do any great damage, but it did require a couple of weeks in Chatham Dockyard to iron out the bumps when we came back. Didn't affect our seaworthiness. That was nasty. I think, I can't exactly remember what happened at the end of the Grenville Commission.
How long were you with her? 2 years?
I think, about a year, I think.
So 58 to 59?
Yes, exactly. 58 and 59 together accounted for the my frigate command time, split between Scarborough and Grenville. I was involved with the Admiral Commanding Reserves. I had to go and live in the northeast of England and control all the sea cadet units up there.
And what was your title, or what was the unit called?
There were 58 units. I was a northeast area officer, Sea Cadet Corps, based in York. And one's job almost entirely was travelling around by car probably four evenings a week to units between north of Northumberland, Ashington, right down to the south of Northamptonshire. It was a hell of a long way. And from the east coast, say Skegness, right across to the Pennines, Derby, and around there. So a lot of motoring, inspecting the units. Their big day was an annual inspection, which I had to do.
And what would it, an annual
inspection be like? Leaving home at, having done a day in the office in York, leaving home about tea time, motoring to, say, Rotherham, arriving in the evening, locating the unit, parking one's car, getting out amongst the brambles and the nettles, putting on one's sword and medals, and at the tick of 7:30, appearing out of the gloom, like, lo, he comes in clouds descending. But that's how, usually how it all started. With a bit of luck, you had a civilised chairman of the unit who would say, come and have some tea with us before you inspect. And then you'd go to his house and get sorted out there. He'd take you down, which was the good way. The other way was hiding in the nettles. So I think I inspected them all twice. So I've been there about 2 years.
And what were you inspecting? If you see what I mean, what were you looking for?
Looking to the end result was a report on the unit, from their smartness, their morale, the efficiency of their instruction, the state of their unit, boat work. Relations with their civilian committee, who are usually local worthies, as often as not, they were councillors or past councillors, generally reporting on the health of the unit itself, sorting out various awards to be given.
How long would that take then? I mean, it sounds quite a lot to do.
Well, usually inspection started at 7:30, would be over by 9:30. The little boys had to go and get off home to bed, and then have a couple of pints of beer and home.
Any other duties as area officer?
There were band contests and rowing contests and swimming contests. There was a whole raft of district officers below one. They were the senior sea cadet officers, sort of lieutenant commander rank, and one relied heavily on them for the sort of week to week conduct of their. Each one would probably have about 10 units of the units, usually thundering good chaps. They were all purely volunteers. I was the only orange chap there.
How did you feel about being grounded, so to speak?
They persuaded me that the Admiral Commanding Reserves had especially wanted a vigorous RN officer, because they'd all had a lot of layabouts up to then. So I was specially selected. I think it's good for the soul.
Are you there until 1961? What was your next posting?
A student at the Joint Services Staff College, Latimer, Army, Navy, Air Force, huge country house.
Latimer House, was it?
Yes.
Where is that? Sorry.
It was in Buckinghamshire, near Chalfont and Chesham and all that. Quite a long course. Must have been, I think, certainly a year. Senior staff course. view aim mainly to acquainting one with the other two services, joint staff work, or project after project in a team of people writing report, planning it and writing reports.
What sort of exercises would you do, these team exercises? What sort of thing?
There could be some minor war starting somewhere, Afghanistan, something, and the logistics and planning for some sort of military operation. That would be the core of it. A lot of visiting experts would lecture on subjects, political, military, naval, air force, sort of general advanced education in that field of things. Probably at least one a week of really big cheeses. Commanded by an admiral.
Did you get a better impression of the different sort of operational requirements of the army and the air force and the navy? You know, sort of.
I think quite yes. One would have liked to have known much more about the other services, but I think you'd have to go and be in the service concerned to really get down to it. I think it's an essential thing to do for any sort of fairly senior officer to have worked together with the other two services. It's certainly a very, very well thought of course.
And when, that would be 61, 62, would it?
Yes.
And what was next?
Then came HMS London, the third of a class of large guided missile destroyers. They were being built in Swan Hunters on the Tyne. Just started gathering the advance party of the crew.
And you were to be the...
I was the executive officer, and for a long time I was in command of the advance party. There was a senior officer up there. It was me, the other two commanders, the engineering commander and the weapons electoral commander were both there. Small numbers of ratings in the technical side, advising the shipbuilders and getting to know what was being built into their ships. From my side, quite a lot concerned with writing the various captain standing orders for the ship to be ready when a new captain came. And one saw the ship being built before one's eyes.
And this was at where? Where was she built?
Swan Hunter Shipyard, Wallsend on Tyne.
What do you remember of that whole experience of seeing it being built?
Gaining, learning almost a new language for the Geordie shipbuilders, who at first are entirely incomprehensible. A lot of interest in seeing the ship developing before one's eyes, getting to know and understand much more shipbuilders' problems. All building up towards the first sea trials, very, very interesting. So were the civilian crew on board, but with a number of naval people amongst them, but they were still in charge. It was their ship still, and their ship for quite a long time, in fact.
You joined her in 63, I think.
Yes. Yes.
Were there any problems on the sea trials?
No, not. Not more than you'd expect. Go out for the day, various speed trials and turning trials and this and that. Then come back into harbour for the evening. No great problems. About that time, the new captain was appointed. He was one Joseph Bartoszek, of Polish extraction, Bartoszek, of Polish extraction. He arrived during the trials period, and I was his executive officer.
Now that's quite a close relation, or should be quite a close relationship. How did it develop between you and Bartoszek?
I think you would say really quite perfectly normal. He was a man of a very strong reputation in the Navy. As a driver, I had no difficulties. Except he, quite honestly, he wanted to do everybody's job for them, was it, to put it in a nutshell, and all the officers were in the same boat in this respect. I had over a year the ship actually running with Joseph Bartoszek, and we left on the best of terms. In fact, it was obviously my job to always be loyal to him, and if it had been otherwise, a good relationship, I would have failed. But he, being Polish, he wasn't quite what one was used to.
Now, after the sea trials, what happened then?
Well, we came down south to the near the dockyard ports. We based at Portsmouth, and there's still quite a lot of trials to be done. Trials and what we call working up, which is sea training. That was carried out at Portland, the naval sea training base, where the ship was sent for many weeks. I think it was about 6 weeks or so on a rigorous program of mainly sea exercises with a specialised group of instructors from ashore, where gunnery firings, anti-submarine exercises, all the functions of a ship. All the internal departments were under training as well, control of damage, and all that kind of thing. Once a week there was a war day, as it were, which a war situation was exercised with aircraft laid on to attack the ship, towing other ships at sea. There's a very rigorous period. Finishes up with a inspection day, which everything's thrown at you, and if you pass that, you're considered to be fit to join the fleet, and that is what happened.
Join which fleet? The home fleet.
I cannot be certain whether there was anything but the home fleet, or there was just the fleet in those days.
Now, what would you say your role was as executive officer? What, if you just define it?
Second in command, primarily. One step above, one step above the other heads of departments: the marine engineer officer, the weapons and electrical engineer officer, the supply and secretariat commander. they were the main departmental heads, and the executive officer, the captain should be able to sit back and actually do very little chores at all. The executive officer should run the ship for him, and the other with the descending pyramid of officers, chief and petty officers, so on. And that is really what happened. I've got as an executive officer or the commander, I've always got to know all that's going on. I'm responsible for the captain for all that's going on.
Now, what's the next thing you remember then?
We were sent off on a long cruise to Bermuda, Houston in Texas, through the Panama Canal, right down the west coast of South America, calling it Peru, Chile, Argentina, Brazil, we were in company with another ship, another frigate called the Penelope, not our class, but smaller, and really I think the aim was largely to assist the Chilean Navy very largely, who were and always have been, I hope still are, intensely pro-British.
In what way were you assisting?
We were able to show them, you know, more modern ships. They had a number of ships, old English cruisers and destroyers. They had quite modern weapon systems in some of them. But they were very grateful for practical assistance, technically, and general operational sort of know-how from us. And we had many days at sea practicing firings, including guided missile firings at targets. But Chile was the principal aim.